Welcome to the Boulder Nutrition Think Tank. This is probably Ron Rosedale's fifth visit to the Think Tank to check in on how we're doing. It's about, 6 weeks into the program for a lot of the participants, and a lot of people are feeling like their bodies know how to fat burn. Finally. We go now to Ron Rosedale talking with the Think Tank at one of the potlucks. This program was recorded around the early part of August 2004.
No. This is we're supposed to guard my chair and someone comes and steals
it. That's right. You can't leave it one bit.
Sorry.
So, where is everybody at?
I think I'm doing pretty well.
Well, good.
I think that kind of sums it up.
Well, that's important. The most important person to think that you're doing well is yourself. So.
Yeah.
You feel you're doing well. Huh?
Well, I'm definitely losing weight. I feel like I have not more energy before I started the diet, but more energy than I did the first few weeks.
Okay.
And people have told me I look better, and I don't think it's just losing weight. I think I do look better.
Good.
And I think other people here do too. That's what it seems like to me.
Well, good.
So, but then maybe I'm just delusional. So.
I hope not.
So
we're just going to be a class of beauties.
That's right.
There you go.
That's right.
I'm really happy to say that I'm doing better. For 4 weeks, I didn't lose a pound. Unfortunately, that was my goal with the diet. But no, now my goal is to be healthy and to get my blood pressure down to whatever it needs to be. So my blood pressure is still going up and down. It's really that I don't know what's going on, but I'm finally, after the fourth week, when my patients were getting very, small, all of a sudden I started losing weight. I mean, not millions of pounds, but just, little
fine.
Bit. And thank
you're
goodness.
You're starting
yes.
to burn fat now a little bit.
There you go.
Huh? Thank God. Finally getting the message.
Yes. So I'm really glad.
Good.
And then the other thing is, Michaela and I were talking that now we can't eat things that we don't supposed to eat, because if you do, you get a horrible diarrhea.
That's true.
It's
like
yeah.
Abuse, you know?
So it's like my body's telling me what's going on now. So I'm doing great.
Good.
I love it. And I have energy, and that's what I love about it.
All right, good.
Carmen?
Carmen?
Ron, I don't know if Michaela. Go ahead. Say why you're
okay,
here.
Okay. Well, I just started this program like 2 weeks ago,
uh-huh.
And I'm feeling better.
Good.
In some way, not in the other way, because I've been making a lot of mistakes. A few mistakes, because sometimes I hear something that is different. Like I was telling you that I hear you that you buy cake rice with peanut butter and some blueberries.
Rice.
So I bought peanut butter and I was putting in my rice cake. So I make some mistake because I don't know, I just started the program.
Mm-hmm.
But what I want is to be healthy, because I have a diabetes and I have high blood pressure and I have cholesterol. So I have many diseases, but I think I'm going to do it.
Good. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to hear that. Yeah, we'll bump in it. Anytime you start something new, when you first start playing tennis, you'll miss the ball a lot.
I can see.
Yeah, so you learn that when you have a rice cake with peanut butter, that's a very, not a good thing to do. The rice cake will turn to sugar, and then it'll take all that peanut butter that you ate and just store it. And so eating one without the other, either one would be better than having them both together.
Uh-huh.
But what we want to do is toss the rice cake. And of course, peanut butter is not the best either, but rice cakes, people think, are a good diet food.
Uh-huh.
And they're actually one of the worst things you can eat.
Uh-huh.
Because they turn to sugar just about faster than anything you can eat.
Uh-huh. So that's why sometimes I don't understand, I think, really what I have to eat.
Mm-hmm.
But
you're going to get there.
I'm seeing a high, yes. So I just
Good.
Start. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Oh, Carmen. No, a mí no speak English.
Dile en español.
¿En español?
Oh,
ok.
Y lo te traduce.
Pues que estoy a gusto con el programa y me he sentido bien.
She's very comfortable with the program and she's feeling better.
Voy a seguir viniendo.
She's gonna continue coming.
Me he sentido mejor y gracias.
She's been feeling a lot better.
Oh, good. In what way?
¿Cómo?
¿De qué manera te has sentido mejor?
Me sentía cansada, me agachaba y no podía levantar las cosas porque respiraba recio.
I couldn't even pick up things because all of a sudden
en el trabajo,
I was breathing very hard.
Y me siento, no he bajado de peso, pero me siento más liviana.
I haven't lost any weight, I don't think so, but I can feel a little bit more lighter.
Did we don't have a body composition.
No.
We'll get that today, so because we'll see what happens. In some cases, in many cases, when people think they haven't lost weight, they actually have. They've lost fat and gained a little lean body mass. So the scale isn't as accurate as the body composition.
Pues vamos a usar otra manera, otra báscula en donde nos va a decir no precisamente nada más el peso, sino que nos va a decir qué grasa hemos perdido y si hemos ganado más más músculo. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Los números van a cambiar.
Gracias.
So we'll get a baseline today.
So hoy vamos a tener una base donde vamos a perder, donde vamos a partir.
Oh, okay. Con los números. Gracias.
Well, I haven't been here since the beginning either. My name is Janaki. Are you all done? Okay. This is my third week, and
what was your name?
Janaki.
Janaki. Okay.
I did very well the first 2 weeks. Mostly, I mean, I got carried away with the almond butter. You know, and sometimes I'd put it on the wasa crackers, and I got sometimes carried away with having too many almonds. But I did very well basically, and I may have lost about 5 pounds. But I had, what did you say, a bounce at the tennis ball this weekend, big time. I just kind of lost it and had donut holes.
True confessions.
Okay. What it's making me see is I'm severely addicted to food, you know, and the way I use food.
Mm-hmm. And you're not taking supplements.
I am taking supplements. I went out and got, okay, not your kind because I wasn't here in the beginning, but I'm taking Metagenics on the multivitamins, and I'm taking calcium, and I'm taking potassium, magnesium,
okay,
and
we need to get you off the
things.
Calcium.
Off the calcium.
Mm-hmm. So we need to fine tune that. Don't
really?
Want calcium. That's
you don't want
actually
calcium.
Inhibit what we're trying to do.
I didn't know
that.
That
impairs insulin signaling.
Oh.
And doesn't even help your bones. That's a misconception.
It doesn't. Okay.
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I know. It sounds so surprising, doesn't it? But again, if you,
okay,
you go back to the talks, and everything that really is important has to do with the communication among the cells, okay? So if you have a choice between what's important, the parts or the communication, choose the communication. And taking extra calcium is going to actually inhibit the communication. And all it is a simple part that has to listen to the communication. It's not the bricks that are important. You can't just pile a bunch of bricks on a lawn and get a house. It's the blueprints. It's the manufacturer. That's what is important. Somebody calculated what our, you know, the minerals in our body is worth. You know, we cost about somewhere between $2 and $3, as far as what the parts in our body would cost. However, it would cost several million dollars to put together a single cell, and we're trillions of cells. So the cost of us is in the instructions on how to put those parts together. And that's what's important. And that is what goes awry in disease. Now you can look at it from a more, you know, grounded level as far as calcium goes. And if you look at what the strength of a bone comes from, it comes from the protein matrix. Again, little kids little babies have very strong bones, and they're flexible. You can actually bend the forearm of an infant. It doesn't hurt. And the reason you can do that is because it's not calcified yet. Calcium will just, it'll lend rigidity and stiffness, but certainly not strength. But calcium is used as an internal messenger in cells. And cells have to keep calcium levels, all cells, any cell on earth, doesn't matter if you're a worm, a bacteria, it makes no difference. You can't have life unless the calcium inside the cell is extremely low. It has to keep very tiny quantities of calcium inside the cell. And cells have very intricate pumps to keep pumping calcium out and getting rid of it. Calcium is actually kind of a poison to cells. And the reason is kind of paradoxical, because it is so important, and that it has to listen to the little calcium that's there. And when any signals a cell, insulin, any signal that enters or approaches a cell, the message from the outside of the cell, the membrane then, to the genetics, to the major blueprints, is going to at least be partially transferred by calcium. And a cell can't hear that extra calcium if there's too much involved, if there's too much on the inside. It's like there were a rock band playing in here right now, I wouldn't be able to talk to you very effectively. And that's what happens if there's too much calcium in the cell. When you take all this extra calcium that you've heard people should take, all you're doing is increasing the noise. You're like increasing the hiss of a telephone line. And if your osteoporosis has nothing to do with calcium, that's just a myth that the dairy industry has perpetuated. Okay? Yep. It's unfortunate, but you know, it is our mission to correct these misconceptions. You know, now there are starting to be a few studies out now. Now what we've arrived at this conclusion a long time ago, just by sticking to the basics of, you know, what we know about science in general, and life, and, you know, what's important. Again, importance is the instructions. That's paramount. Anything that's going to inhibit instructions has to be bad for you. Period. And, you know, that's all you have to know, and then you'd know that taking extra calcium can't be all that great. But now there's starting to be a few studies coming out that show that taking extra calcium is detrimental, for instance, to teenagers, and does not help bone strength. There was a study that came out last month, and you're going to start seeing more and more studies like that. And again, calcium is just a little part listening to orders. And you can take a bunch of calcium, and if you were to take a cup of calcium carbonate, or whatever people take these days, and mix it in a bucket of blood, you're not going to get a bone. You know, that's not sufficient. So just taking calcium and having it float around in your blood, what makes the medical profession think that calcium knows to go in your bone? It doesn't. If you've got some signals that are causing you to have osteoporosis, some aberrant signals, faulty signals that are causing you to have osteoporosis, taking extra calcium is not going to fix those signals. Contrarily, it's actually going to make those signals worse.
Okay? That's very confusing when we have all of these supplements that we're taking, and when we as uninformed people don't know what our bodies are deficient in or not, to think of all of the...
Yeah, well, nobody in this country...
...where you need to have those calcium pills.
Well, nobody in this country, hardly anybody, is going to be deficient in calcium. It's everywhere. It's quite the contrary. Magnesium is going to be much more of a deficiency. And magnesium and calcium kind of oppose one another. Mm-hmm. And there's kind of a ratio.
Like Cal-Mag together, though.
Well, Cal-Mag together, you're going to absorb the calcium and probably not absorb the magnesium. Magnesium aids in calcium absorption. And what we need really is the opposite. We want magnesium to supplant the calcium. And one of the major benefits of magnesium is that magnesium can kind of take the place of calcium and push calcium out of the way, so that it makes it easier for your cells to get rid of calcium. So magnesium is concentrated inside cells. That's where magnesium goes. And it has the same electrical charge as calcium, so just by electrical repulsion, it's able to keep calcium out of cells and make it easier on your cells to do their job. And so you don't want to take calcium with magnesium, to tell you the truth. You want to take magnesium by itself.
And you're going to get plenty of calcium just taking vegetables and taking nuts and just, you know, there's no problem there. Most people have a calcium to magnesium intake that's many-fold higher than it ought to be. You know, it's 20, 30 to 1 calcium to magnesium. And it should be closer to 1 to 1. So calcium is not the problem. It's more the other way around, really, is getting in magnesium, at least for the first probably 6 months. It's going to take at least that long to...
So just plain magnesium tablets.
Magnesium, potassium is fine, and at least for a while, I prefer that nobody take any calcium supplements. I mean, there's going to be always a little bit in multivitamins. It's used to help vitamin C sometimes and things like that. But as far as, you know, going out of your way to take calcium, I wouldn't do that. Okay.
I always thought about that. Yeah, you look at a cow or an elephant or something, and they don't drink milk their whole lives, and they're huge, they're massive. Products.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. I actually mentioned that quite a bit. It's a good point. It's a very good point. You know, lions and tigers and bears have very strong bones and very strong teeth, and the only time they ever have any dairy product is when they're weaning, you know, for a very short period of time, and they don't have any after that, and they have no problem with their bones. In fact, osteoporosis is almost unknown in the wild. And even if you look at population studies, if you look at the populations that have the lowest incidence of osteoporosis, which are in the Asian communities, they also have the lowest intake of calcium. And so, you know, where do they get this information that we need calcium for strong bones? It comes from nowhere. There's no scientific merit to that recommendation. None.
I had someone recommend that I take calcium, a doctor recommend that I take calcium, and I said, well, is there any evidence that taking calcium helps at all? And he said, no.
Yeah, he won't be able to show you any.
But nonetheless, he felt compelled to recommend that I take calcium.
I know. That's because they do what they're told. I mean, it even goes on a much deeper level. I know, you know, somebody quite closely who came down with breast cancer. And she was given the usual spiel that she needed chemotherapy and radiation. And she approached me and asked, what do I think about chemotherapy? And I said, well, you asked the oncologist, doctor who specializes in cancer, if they can show any evidence that chemotherapy will enhance her survival rate. And he could not. Chemotherapy is somewhere of the order of $20,000 a month, you know, it's like $10,000 a week or something like that for chemotherapy. And yet they can give no evidence that it helps at all. Why do they use it? Well, I'll tell you why they use it. And there can only be one reason. And that's because somebody's making a lot of money on it.
But it doesn't help the cancer rate at all?
No.
What does?
Well, certain things, again, I'm not a, you know, I don't want to say that I'm a calcium expert, but one of the things we know can reduce the growth rate of cancer, at least, is by keeping sugar levels really low. This is dietary. There's no money involved because sugar is an obligate glucose user. Cancer cells are exercising heavily, essentially. They're multiplying. They're using a lot of energy. It's basically anaerobic activity. They're outpacing the supply of blood. And you can only burn sugar without oxygen and not fat. And so rapidly growing cancer cells are burning sugar. And one of the ways we know that you can slow down cancer is to not feed it. Just don't feed it sugar. The last thing you want to do is eat a sugar eat a diet that is high in sugar or turns into sugar. We also know that high levels of insulin are growth factors. Insulin is a signal, and I might have talked about this before, it's a signal to reproduce, for cellular reproduction. So when insulin levels are high, it signals cells to reproduce. That means divide. And we know that high insulin levels are very highly correlated with cancer rates. And now a recent study has shown not just are high levels of insulin correlated with incidence of future cancers, but that you can lower insulin and treat prostate cancer, for instance, very effectively. And that was, I think, a study that came out maybe 6 months ago or something like that. And those are two known ways. In fact, the two best ways we know of to treat cancer are still have to do with the sugar and insulin connection because of their importance in reproduction and aging and, you know, some of the basics. You know, if you get down to some of the just little basics that cover everything, you can go a long way. But none of these things involve drugs. Nobody's going to make any money with those things, so you don't hear about it. The one thing I really want to impress on you, and it's a sad state of affairs, the things that you hear about and the recommendations that are given are not given to enhance your health. They're given to enhance somebody's, some corporation's pocketbook.
Well, I have a friend of mine, and I totally believe you, but I do have a very, very dear friend who had a very virulent form of breast cancer. She did have chemo and radiation and got over it.
Mm-hmm. And Cynthia will.
There's tremendous amount of studies on placebo effect also. And that's something that's not been really, people don't really get it, but sometimes people get a sense of something's being done that it may or may not, maybe it's the placebo.
But she also had surgery.
She did. She
right.
Had double mastectomy.
Right.
But she did have other things. Other things.
I'm sure she did. But they were probably removed too. I mean, they went in and took out her lymph nodes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's very likely, and not, you know, or at least possible, that she survived despite the chemo, not because of it.
Could be.
You know, people don't realize that. Many people who are on cholesterol-lowering drugs, you know, if they survive longer, it's probably despite the lowering cholesterol. And a lot of information is coming out to that effect. The lowering cholesterol actually increases mortality rate. But the cholesterol-lowering drugs are, you know, mild anti-inflammatories and they have other effects. Mm-hmm. And if they're helping heart disease, it's not because they're lowering cholesterol, but they might be helping the heart disease in spite of lowering cholesterol, not because of it.
Can I finish up with this? I just wanted to say that I have high blood pressure and I've been on two medications. And since doing this, even though it's been imperfect, I've been perfect. My blood pressure has been 120 over 80.
On the medications?
Still on the medications.
Okay, well.
But even when I was on the medications, there were times where it was off.
Well, when we get things down a little bit further, I mean, when we get the diet down a bit further and you get a little bit further along, it would be my hope, because I see it all the time, that you won't need the medications.
Oh, I would love it.
Yeah. That happens more often than not.
Mm-hmm. So I haven't been through any of your tests, and I'm wondering, should I come to your office and do whatever is necessary just to get up to snuff? I mean, I'll pay for it. I didn't come out this part. So, I mean, I probably should do this.
If you're on medications, I think, you know, I mentioned early on, you weren't around, that anybody on medications for sure should come in for a visit.
Okay.
Or at least have a visit over the phone or something where we need to connect, and because we're going to need to adjust your medications. I need to know what they are. There are certain blood pressure medications that interfere with what we're trying to do and others that don't. So if you did have to be on a blood pressure medication, some of them are better than others as far
Topral
as...
Topral and candesartan.
Say again?
Topral and candesartan. Just curious.
It's essentially acting. They're not as bad as some of them. Put it that way.
I will.
Well, I'm doing pretty well and I'm enjoying eating this way, although... Both of our boys went off on vacations to far-flung places, and this week I ate a lot of pistachios.
That's okay.
Actually, it was interesting, though, because I ate a lot. And pistachios have a lot more carbohydrates in them. And I think I'm pretty sensitive to carbohydrates because almonds, they're not interesting enough to eat that much. But there was something about that level of them that I ate a lot of them. And that was just interesting to observe, but I figured... I was watching boxes get packed and suitcases get taken out, and so I ate the pistachios.
Well, you know, if you're gonna
binge, that's a gentle binge, Shelley.
Right.
The other thing is, I talked with Pilar and her mom, and her mom's doing well. In fact, her blood sugars are staying really steady, and her blood pressure is staying pretty steady. And the doctor, when Pilar talked with the People's Clinic doctor, she
called yesterday. And such a wild day, I didn't get a chance to call back. I need to do that.
But evidently, she listened for a while, and she said, well, if it's helping your mom, that is good. And so this is a doctor who's pretty open to different possibilities because she really cares about her patients.
That's great.
Yeah.
Maybe I can discuss what is happening in person, probably.
Maybe I could bring a microphone.
Sure.
Ooh. I'm doing better. My energy's come back, and it's up to, it's paced. It's the difference between coffee sugar energy, which is way strong for me, and now a green tea energy, which is more paced. My whole being is getting that way better. My resilience, my emotional resilience is much smoother, which is one thing I was working on because I'm so high anxiety and I'm sick of it. I'm sick of the whole term energetic. I'm done with it. I'm ready to let it go. Someone else can have it. But a couple of odd things happened to me during this time. One of them was I forgot about it until everybody's going around the circle. A week ago, I had a blood vessel break in my eye, and that was odd, and there was blood on my pillow. So I don't know if I caught it with a pillow thing or what, but it was very alarming to me because I wear contacts. And so I called up my optometrist, went in to see her, and she said, well, and I said, it was right before I was under tension because I had to write a grad paper on a subject that I don't know anything about, which was birding. And I had done hours of watching birds and taking notes on birds, but still, it's still kind of scary to write up because it's a new subject for me, and send it in to PhD people, and it's been a long time since I've done formal papers anyhow. So this was right before I had to spend 3 days whomping away on a computer. When I went in to see the optometrist, she said, oh, where's your blood pressure? And I said, come on, I had it taken yesterday because I went in to see the asthma doctor and it was 102 over 60. How much better can you get?
The blood pressure. A burst blood vessel on the surface of your eye has nothing to do with blood pressure.
It was not
those
in the tissue.
More, you know, little arterioles and capillaries. And, blood pressure has nothing to do with that.
So it was a fluke?
Well, what likely happened, you know, it's a combination of two things. If you have kind of bloodshot eyes.
I don't.
I mean, if you were up late, if you're working hard, your eyes are open to my, because it happens to me. I've had that several times. Oh. It's nothing to be alarmed about. Sometimes it looks horrible if you get this glare, you know, the white of your eye gets all red, and you look like a freak. But it's inconsequential. It looks much worse. You know, it's like a little bruise, basically.
Does it have to do with stress?
It can. You know, if you're, you know, when you have bloodshot eyes, when you know you have little veins in your eye showing. Well, one of those little veins can pop.
She said looking through binoculars, maybe. She heard what I've been doing for 2 weeks, which is going out and
Yeah, and that could have been, too. You're just kind of irritated. Basically, what happened is you just irritate a little surface blood vessel in your eye, and it ruptured. And, you know, look.
It has nothing to do with the diet, then. I don't know what matches and what doesn't.
Yeah, should have nothing to do. Your blood becomes so-called thinner most of the time, but that's the way it is supposed to be. Most people's blood clots too fast, and that predisposes one to stroke and heart attacks and things like that. If your blood clots, why, you know, heart patients, they put on aspirin. It's one of the that was one of the reasons for it. Although now we know aspirin has other effects on inflammation and things like that, but they'll put people on other blood thinners. But naturally, your blood is not supposed to clot as readily as most people's do. When you have when you have signals to increase inflammation, you know, any type of pro-inflammatory substances will cause your blood to clot far too readily. So we know vitamin E can thin your blood a little bit. Fish oil thins your blood a little bit. These are usually good things, but thinning your blood doesn't make it rupture. So something else actually instigated it, and then it might have bled a little bit longer because of that, but it didn't cause it to rupture in the first place.
She said it was like when you get a ruptured eye vessel that you have one drop of blood on the counter and you put saran wrap over it, it squishes all over the place.
Right.
That made sense.
Right.
Because it took a while. It
looks much worse than it really is. It's really pretty inconsequential. Mm-hmm. And has nothing to do with your blood pressure.
Good news is that's the lowest blood pressure I've had, and the other good news is I have permission from my asthma doctor now. I've gone from at my worst attacks before I went completely off dairy and off bread,
I was at a 550 over 50, which was an induced asthma that I got 3 years ago due to stress and overexercise during a traumatic period in my life. And I'm down to 50 over, an Advair 50 over something. It's the lowest one you can get. And I got permission to take it down once a day instead of two. And since I seem to be more sensitive to the fact that we live in a smog bowl, summers for me, and the rainstorms we've been having, if I'm going to kick up an asthma, we'll kick that up more than a dry winter will. But I think I'm going to be able to leave it within a year. I went and just blew the top off the asthma little breathalyzer machine thing. So I'm really pleased about that.
That's great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's very good.
Mm-hmm. So I'm pleased. Will I be able to take down my Synthroid eventually?
We'll test,
which is
see.
Having no thyroid because it was taken out for cancer when I was 28.
Well, you need some thyroid. Your dose might be able to be lowered. I doubt that you'll be able to get off of it if you don't have a thyroid.
Okay.
You need some thyroid.
Okay.
Yeah. For me, I seem to, my depression is pretty much, it was really gone last weekend. I mean, it was really, I felt totally great. I had no dips or anything else, but now I've been off some of the supplements, and then I feel like my energy's kind of dropped down a little bit. But for about a week there, like last week, I just felt like I wasn't depressed at all. I could come home, I can go for a hike, I can clean up the house. I was working all weekend, and I, for weeks or months, I couldn't do that. I would come home, I just was exhausted. So that was a really huge thing for me. I lost about 10 pounds, wanted to lose more, but in my energy, working out, I mean, I have no problems at all anymore. I mean, I go and I work out. The only time if I don't run, I'm having a problem with heel spurs, which is not, it's all body mechanics, so that's the only thing that limits my running. But I don't feel exhausted anymore, you know, so that's that much is over. I have a history of lipomas, and they're shrinking, which is a real big thing for me. I was really excited. Fatty tumors under the skin. And I've had them, and they used to ache. I could feel them ache, like I can feel them growing. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't know what, I couldn't correlate why they would grow. I know I can't do dairy. I can do feta cheese fine, but I can't do cow dairy. And I used to stay away from it, but I used to, you know, go to a sushi bar and I come back and I feel them aching. I had never correlated why they would ache, and now I'm like realizing most carbohydrates. Because I had to go eat a lot of rice, and then that's carbohydrates, and they would ache. But now I haven't felt them ache at all, and all of them are getting smaller. Some of them are getting small,
very
about
cool.
half
that's
the
good.
Size.
So maybe we're burning them away.
That's the fantasy. I would like to see them that happen. Yeah. So all in all, I think I'm doing really well. I have a lot of energy, and we were also talking about how we're like binging. And as I'm listening to how we're binging, most of us, I mean, the binges and the true confessions are like so minuscule compared to what they used to be on the other diets, you know, like mm-hmm. I used to eat like a half a piece of, or half a cake or something. Now you're eating six donut holes. Like, my God, it's, I ate, we were eating Rye Crisp with almond butter. Rye Crisp, not Rye Crisp, almond butter, and blueberries. And
but this is not to say that that's a good thing to do.
Yeah.
I want you to think that's horrible.
Sounds like rice. That's why.
It's the wasa. It's the wasa stuff.
None of them are really great.
Wasa bread.
Rye is a type of cracker. It's not rice. Rye and rice sound a lot the same, but rye is a grain, and I don't know how to say it.
But it's these wasa fiber rice. Yeah.
On rice.
But one day I ate two of them, and it, you know, for me, relatively speaking, that was like really nothing. But I felt the difference, like, wow, you know, you ate too many.
Yeah,
it's like you ate too many, and it's really, it's like embracing this more as a lifestyle change as opposed to looking at it like, well, this is a diet and I want to get off it. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is, you know, if you go off it, you feel how you feel differently, and it really makes a difference in your attitude and stuff. Yeah, you pay the price,
right.
And it's like, why do I?
Anabuse.
Why do I want to do this anymore? And so I don't crave the things, although I really enjoy looking at a really good pie.
if you can be satisfied looking at it.
Cherry pie is, you know, but I don't feel like I really want to go and stick and eat like half the pie anymore. It's like I'll have a few cherries, you know, and that satiates me enough, but I don't feel like I really crave sugar anymore. And I used to look about how much sugar I used to eat, relatively speaking, and it was like, God, it was in everything.
Cool.
So I've been feeling really good about it.
Good. That's great.
There's two other things to mention. One is that Lauren has a cookbook that she got about Eastern Mediterranean food that's traditional meals, and it was really amazing to look through it because it was mostly things that you could eat this way, showing again how traditional diets were much more this way than people realized.
Right.
Low carbohydrate.
Very interesting.
And there's a workshop coming up very soon in the fall about returning to traditional food.
Yeah.
Not Sally Fallon, but one of the other people she works with. They're going to be putting it on this coming up. The other question I wanted to ask about
Well,
we had a discussion about CoQ10, and I've been told, and I've been taking that. I always take that, but I was told that you should cut off of it for a month because it builds up in the body in a way that is good. Is this true?
It depends on how much you're taking. There's been some research. If you took really high doses for a long time, it can act as a pro-oxidant. It can increase oxidation, but the amounts that we're talking about don't even approach anything like any of the studies have shown. So,
I had a CoQ10 story. So, last weekend I was out car camping, out by Medicine Bow Wilderness in Wyoming, and I took my supplements with me, and when I unpacked them, I didn't unpack my CoQ10. And yesterday, in the middle of the day, I had this really intense, like right around T7, like muscle spasm on my back. I felt like a mid-thoracic rotation. And I just couldn't do anything with it. Just felt really, really intense. And I was trying to figure out what I did with when I worked out, and I didn't change anything. I couldn't understand what happened. Then it dawned on me like that's like an alarm point for the cardiovascular system. So then I went home and I'm looking for my CoQ10 because I remember you told one of the other gentlemen here who was having some kind of chest symptoms that if you take more CoQ10 that would abate that. So I realized, my God, I didn't take it. I haven't taken it the last 3 days. And I found it and I took one last night and one this morning and then didn't do anything else with it. Didn't do any acupuncture, any manual therapy, and it just went away. It's completely gone. So it was really interesting for me. I'm like, God, this is intense. But I don't know why. What is CoQ10 doing for us in this diet with the heart, with the diet that we're on?
Well, CoQ10 is a necessary cofactor in what's called oxidative phosphorylation. And that's how mitochondria will take oxygen and burn food and create ATP. And if you have to make sure that there is enough CoQ10 so that when food is converted into energy, some of the electrons aren't lost. It's one of the major handlers of electrons from food that takes it from the food to the ATP, and it makes the conversion of food into energy more efficient. Mm-hmm. Less of it is lost as toxic byproducts called free radicals. Mm-hmm. And that's essentially what it's doing. But you'll notice the benefits more in those tissues that have to make a lot of energy.
And the heart's one of them.
And the heart's one of them. Yeah. Right.
My energy picked up once I got the L-carnitine supplements, because I didn't have them for about the first month of the diet. And I don't know if it's because my body got used to the diet or because the L-carnitine helped. What does L-carnitine do?
L-carnitine is necessary to take fatty acids from fats into the mitochondria to be burned. It's a shuttle.
Okay.
And so it's tired, a rate-limiting factor. If you're tired, and that's one of the reasons we have people on it, if you're not capable of taking enough fatty acids into the mitochondria and you don't have sugar, because we're not feeding you sugar, then you're going to be a little bit more tired.
Because it helped.
Mm-hmm. L-carnitine is good. It also helps protect the mitochondrial membranes from damage. There's a pretty powerful theory of aging that has to do with, it's called the mitochondrial theory of aging, that since mitochondria are entrusted with the conversion of food into energy, most of the damage from that conversion takes place in mitochondria. And when enough mitochondria get damaged, we have a harder time producing energy, and that energy then is insufficient to maintain our life, and we end up getting the symptoms of aging and dying. And there was actually a recent study that that mutated a certain gene in mitochondria so that they couldn't repair themselves as well. And this very much simulated accelerated aging. Like the animals just aged exactly as they would have, only much faster. I mean, they got gray hair, you know, they got diabetes, all the symptoms of aging occurred at a much faster rate. So it seemed to be evidence that perhaps the mitochondrial theory might have some merit. And L-carnitine has been shown, along with lipoic acid, when the two are used together especially, it protects a component that is found almost exclusively in mitochondrial membranes called cardiolipin, and it helps regenerate the cardiolipin and keep the mitochondrial membranes more protected against free radical damage, in addition to its ability to carry fats into the mitochondria to be burned.
When we get our second blood test, will you be looking at our supplements and tweaking them depending on what we need then?
We'll be using your blood test as a guide, but also just how you're doing. If a person is still craving carbohydrates, we might do something different than somebody who's having no trouble. So
just as kind of a general overview, if you want to look at this, we were curious looking at this, some of the variations. Here's people's percentage of body fat, the people who were measured. And then this is their proinsulin, for instance. And what's interesting to you looking at this, or what's worth explaining?
This is nice. Well, let's see, where is people's leptin?
Leptin's over here.
All the way on the right, okay. Let's see, percent body fat. Okay, so we have some, let's see.
You can fold it together if you want to.
What we're gonna, the interesting thing that we see is that leptin levels do not necessarily correlate with percent body fat. That's somewhat of a misconception. We know that leptin is manufactured by fat, and the usual thinking is that the fatter you are, the more leptin you have, and the reason you have more leptin is because you're fat. And the more leptin you have, the more leptin resistant you become, and the only way to get your leptin levels down is to lose the fat. But then you're into a vicious cycle, because you're not going to really be able to lose weight effectively until you become more leptin sensitive. And that means keeping leptin levels down. So, you know, what came first, the chicken or the egg, and how are you going to get out of this vicious cycle? But what we're really seeing is that your leptin levels are not necessarily correlated. I mean, there's a trend. If you're fatter, you tend to have more leptin. But you can have two people with the same percentage of body fat, and one person will have a much higher leptin than the other person, and that is diet related. And you can bring down leptin, we've seen very dramatically by changing one's diet to what we're recommending. And the change in leptin occurs far before any significant change in percent body fat. You'll see it in 2 weeks. And so how much fat have you lost in 2 weeks? You know, if you're lucky, you've lost a couple pounds. And yet you can drop your leptin levels to a third of what they were. And then it makes it easier in the future. So basically, your body fat follows leptin and not the other way around. That's one thing. What the proinsulin and the percent proinsulin, the percent proinsulin is something that we're looking at more recently. And it's a sign of islet cell stress. The islet cells are the cells in your pancreas that manufacture insulin. And one of the first signs that they're becoming stressed, and that a person then is on the verge of becoming diabetic by the traditional definition of high blood sugar, is when the percent of proinsulin goes up. Proinsulin is what the islet cells manufacture, and then before it's released into the blood, you chop off a little segment of that proinsulin called C-peptide, and then the C-peptide and insulin are secreted into the blood. When the islet cells are damaged, they have a harder time cleaving off that C-peptide, and they release then a bunch of proinsulin into the blood, which isn't as effective. And so it's a sign of islet cell damage, islet cell sickness, before a person would actually become diabetic.
Over what percent?
20% is bad. So when you see percentages like 66%, 64%, 44%, 52%, those are bad.
Now, is that the case even if the insulin level was very low?
If the insulin level is normal. That's a kind of a more sensitive sign.
So what are we shooting for, about 10?
Well, 10 now, 18, 15 would be good.
If someone has C-peptides are not good to have, right? Is that the C-reactive or is that a different thing?
No, C-peptide is fine. I mean, you want to have some. C-peptide is, there's a certain amount of C-peptide that a person will have. C-peptide's mainly used to measure the amount of insulin a person is producing on their own when they're taking insulin. So in other words, if a person is on insulin, a diabetic is on insulin, measuring insulin is not going to do much good, because all it's going to do is reflect how much they've taken. So if we want to find out if a person is, if a diabetic is still capable of producing insulin on their own, then you measure C-peptide. So it's used in people who are taking insulin.
There's one interesting, there's a figure there of someone who has 22% body fat, and their insulin level is pretty low. Their proinsulin level isn't that high. But this is someone who said that they're tired a lot. Is there something about that ratio that's a clue?
Not necessarily. I would, probably it might have some. What's their leptin levels? And free T3 and the other things. I don't know who the person is, so we'd have to look at that. But let's see, where's body fat percent? 22. I see a 23 and a 24. 22. Oh, here's a 22. Okay. Proinsulin. Well, the proinsulin's high. Real high.
For that person.
In fact, they have the highest proinsulin of anybody here.
Highest percentage.
Percentage.
And so even though it's not that high a number, it's relative to their insulin, that's a problem.
Right. Free T3 is fine. TSH is fine. Is that person taking thyroid? Because their TSH is actually pretty low. Usually you see that when a person's taking thyroid. Their leptin is low. So if they're still tired, we'd have to talk about it. We don't have any of the other tests. We don't have the usual. We don't have, for instance, BUN, creatinine, potassium, sodium, calcium.
So this is clues that you can use to figure out how to fine-tune things.
Mm-hmm. But fatigue is something that, essentially, when anything is wrong with you, you're going to be more fatigued for the most part. So it doesn't really guide one very much. It just says something's not quite right. And so we have to look for other clues. Maybe there's other tidbits of information we might be able to get out of a better history to maybe kind of zoom in on why that person might be tired.
Well, I'm really intrigued with the idea that somebody's insulin level can be relatively low, but if their percentage in terms of the proinsulin to the insulin is high, then that's the bigger issue. Right. It's not what I expected.
That means the islet cells are not working right. And what it can mean then is when they need the insulin, in other words, when their sugar goes up, they need to put out insulin to be able to drive the sugar into the cells so the cells can use the sugar as energy, they're not capable of doing that properly.
So that's someone who's a little bit more like a type 1 diabetic, a little tiny bit.
To some extent, yeah.
You're talking about people. Are those people gonna know? I mean, how
are we
gonna know?
It's not anybody here, but yours is interesting, Teresa, because your leptin levels and do you remember what number you were there?
Seven.
Because you have high blood pressure, but your levels were pretty low in terms of your statistics.
Do we have weight?
Not.
Here.
Is that important to have? Pretty much, or is just the body fat percentage important?
And weight would be good. Okay. In fact, yeah, we need the weight to know about lean body mass.
No.
Do we have a sheet of paper that has it? So
no,
when we do it today.
She told me we do, and I've got it's just hidden in this Excel spreadsheet.
Oh, that's fine. It doesn't have to be on here.
Shelly,
yeah. But we know we have a sheet. Like when we take it today.
Oh,
You told me.
Okay. It's because we wrote Teresa in on a different line then.
Let's go ahead and start taking people's weights, but I'd like to write it on the piece of paper we did before.
I have a question. I don't have that paper here, but I can tie it into that piece of paper because I've got it at home.
But we won't have it here to be able to tell people how well they've done?
We can do it based on this because we can calculate the percent body fat and show them how that's changed.
Yeah, but we can't then measure lean body mass.
Oh.
It won't help that much.
Sure, husband.
In other words...
So this number isn't the opposite of the... It's not the mirror image of the lean body mass.
Mm.
Oh, okay.
You need to know weight, too.
Okay.
In other words, you need to... You multiply this times their weight, and then you get the pounds of fat, which you then subtract from the total weight to get their lean body mass.
Yeah.
So you need the weight, too.
But she has that information so that we could do it.
I know. I just would like to know.
I know.
I'll send something to you as soon as I get home.
Remember?
Before we do this, could I ask a question? Sorry. I just want to get this in. I'm going in for surgery, arthroscopic surgery on my knee next week. And I didn't know if I should have any concerns about... well, for one thing, I'm not going to eat for a very long time, and I'll be under anesthesia, and I just didn't know if there was anything in particular. It just occurred to me, well, maybe there's something I ought to be thinking about here.
Okay, because arthroscopic surgery is not going to do too much damage, so you're not going to have to worry about it too much. But in general, for surgeries, you want to kind of bump up zinc, and you want to bump up vitamin C. These are nutrients that are used to help heal your body. Maybe a little extra selenium and things like that. Glutamine would be really good.
Okay.
That helps your body heal. So in general,
zinc,
those things would be good.
Glutamine. Okay.
Zinc, glutamine. Zinc and glutamine and selenium are three things that you might want to bump up a little bit.
Zinc, glutamine. Did you say selenium?
Yeah.
And the other thing is I have been concerned because my C-reactive protein levels have been high for the past, I don't know how long, but a few years. And I have had, I don't know what besides heart disease can cause that. Like, is it any inflammation? Could it be because I've had this knee problem?
Yeah. C-reactive protein is not at all specific for heart.
So that
I have a risk factor, but... It just says that damage is going on somewhere.
So this chronic knee...
Could be driving that up. It could be all sorts of things.
Okay.
Yeah. It could be high leptin itself, in that we're doing a study after a while when we gather enough information. I want to see the correlation between leptin and C-reactive protein. Leptin itself is inflammatory. So just the fact if a person has high levels of leptin, their C-reactive protein is probably going to be higher than it otherwise would be. And so one of the things that I want to see on you and other people is how this diet affects C-reactive protein without having to do anything else.
Yeah, but I know that I've had my C-reactive protein levels checked recently, but I don't know if other people here have, so I don't know.
If they've done the laboratory test that we want them to do, then it should have been done.
It's not on the... It wasn't on our...
Maybe not.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
It wasn't included on these, huh?
No.
Well, we'll check it. If you've had it done in the past and you know it's been high, that'd be interesting. We'll just, check yours.
And I've even had to check recently, so.
Great, that'd be great. So after a while, we'll check it again and see if we've made a dent in it.
Yeah. I'd like to.
So in terms of lean body mass, we have all that data, but it's at my home.
Okay, so we'll have to have delayed gratification here.
Plus, we'll still do the weight.
Yeah, we'll still do it.
So what is this about 7? And you changed it?
You said, I think that payment is closing here, so we might need to transfer.
7 is me.
Shelley, where could we?
5 is Teresa.
They're closing.
Oh.
No, no podemos pasar esto porque me dijo que le hablara por teléfono. Cuando ya quisiera cerrar porque ella es la que va a cerrar.
Okay, so we can stay here until she calls her to tell her that now.
Tell her we can be out of here in 10 minutes.
Okay.
Yes,
we'll be out of here in 10 minutes. Let me just set this up and
so I just won't
she can wait
10
minutes, we'll be done.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to
that.
Me too.
No, porque ella tiene que llamar.
Ya venga a cerrar.
Look at my little face. This is so
funny. You know what makes it fun? Get your feeling. Just thinking we have any of those interesting people are sticking.
Can't read again. Nothing with you, but I have a list.
So I was just curious who I was paralleling. It was over in here. Okay, I'll bet you that Ron's going to need someone to write this stuff in. Yeah, and I bet you're going to need this to put it on. Let's write it on the back. Let's just do that. Because it's going to be a little different data, and I can go ahead and put it on this.
You don't want to put it against the center stuff?
Well, there's more numbers than that. So what we may need to do is get another piece of paper or something.
I have more white paper. Do you want white paper?
White
do you want the back?
White, right, because we're going to need to use this.
Socks,
I wore too heavy a stuff.
I feel like I should have spitting in a cup for a while.
And I ate a big dinner, and I always weigh myself first thing in the morning, and I went wearing spider webs over to Lauren's, which is where I got my body fat thing done, because I missed
that. I don't know what that even is.
I had the lightest stuff I could cover my body with and still say I had clothes on. Because of vanity. Well, you're going for belts. I'm not going to talk about the necklace.
No, this is
I'm
going
to take off my earring?
No. This is what I measured myself off with before. This is how I got measured before. So I'm just trying to reduplicate.
I'm thinking this weighs a lot more than I had before. Do you remember, Lauren, if we put me in as 5'3 or 5'2?
Just don't get it wet.
I don't remember numbers at all.
I don't either. I'm dyslexic with them.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm dyslexic.
That's extra
numbers.
You know what would be nice if we knew our numbers?
I know.
I know not my numbers. She's got a list of the numbers.
You want to say?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is the
Let's see, how are we going to do this?
I think just names and...
Names now, and then we'll figure out the numbers
right,
later.
Right, because I think
some
this is...
Some people don't even have a number, right?
And I don't think this is correct anyway. I think this needs to be...
That is?
Okay. I'm going to do the same thing. Stripping. Na-na-na-na-na.
Okay.
Okay, let's see. Let's get this right there.
Standard female, and what we'll need to do also is put height. Yeah. Now, does everybody? This is the hard part. Does everybody know what their height was that we used the last time we measured this? It's very important.
Oh, how tall I am?
Five. Okay. So as long as people know what we used last time, so let's use it, and we'll have to compare.
Okay. That
because if
good.
It's different than what it was before, we'll have to do it again.
Your scale. So you're going to have to look at your scale under number 5.
Okay, so how tall are you? This is the first time you've done this.
5'2".
5'2". Okay.
I thought I was 5'2 and 3/4 when I checked with the doctors. I was 5'2 and 4. So I don't know what we were going to have with the doctor after I saw you.
Well, I'm just saying 5'2 because I think I saw that number on the scale. But
all right, we'll go with 5'2.
I think I remember seeing that number on the scale.
Okay, 174.5 pounds, 51%, and 88.5. Okay, you can go off.
Subidos.
No, go ahead.
I'm
sure
you
can
do it.
Yeah?
More.
Yeah.
So let's see.
5'10".
You have light clothes on. You have bunch of wallets or anything? So we'll go. And you're 5'10". Okay. That's very good. Good. Congratulations. That's a lot better.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, who's next? And you're, hold on, five feet, period?
That's it. Yeah? Can I get up?
Not quite. No, okay. Now you can.
Okay.
There you go. 145. Mm-hmm. Was that good?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, that's it?
No, no.
I'm sorry. Sorry.
All right. Okay, 45.
Yeah, it was
45% and 65 pounds.
I was 151.
All right, see? We're getting down there. Okay, hold on. And how tall are you? 5'5", and we'll have to use one or the other. 5'5½" or 5'6"?
5'5". I'm Shelley Schlender. You've been listening to a weekly meeting of the Boulder Nutrition Think Tank, launched in 2004. For questions about medications, be sure to consult with your primary care physician. Whenever you make a lifestyle change, tell your doctor, including about any diet or supplement changes. The Boulder Nutrition Think Tank is conducted at the Family Learning Center in Boulder, 303-442-8979. Ask for Pilar. To contact Ron Rosedale, check the website therosedalediet.com or call 303-790-8766.